Hello, and welcome to Life Matters, the program where we engage life issues with critical thinking and a biblical worldview. Life Matters is an educational outreach resource of Assure Women's Center in Omaha, Nebraska. We're honored to host a variety of guests within the pro-life movement, each bringing their own unique perspectives, experiences, and backgrounds. The views and opinions expressed by our guests do not necessarily reflect those of Life Matters, Assure Women's Center, or our affiliates. Our goal is to foster open, thoughtful dialogue around life-affirming issues and equip listeners to stand for life.
Welcome to Life Matters. I'm Tony Clark, Executive Director of Assure Women's Center in Omaha, and I'm so glad you're joining us today. Today, we're joined by Dr. Edward D. Simone, Professor of Pharmacy Sciences at Creighton University, where he's taught since 1989. He's a pharmacist, researcher, speaker, and national pro-life leader. Dr. D. Simone has served as faculty moderator of Creighton Students for Life since 1994 and sits on the board of several pro-life and patient safety organizations. We'll talk about his professional journey, his advocacy for life, and his perspective on the abortion pill. Dr. D. Simone, welcome to Life Matters.
Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, I'm so happy that you had the opportunity to join us, and I'm looking forward to our conversation today. So let's start with your story. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, your family, and what experiences have shaped you into who you are today.
Okay. We'll start with the easy one.
Okay.
I'm a New Yorker.
Okay.
So I was born in Manhattan and, to Italian immigrants. So my grandparents on both sides came over through Ellis Island.
Okay.
And so we have a really robust history of our family.
True.
So after high school, I went to Philadelphia to go to school at Temple University. I went through school and life was good.
Yeah.
I did well.
So how did you first become personally involved in the pro-life movement?
My friend and I were both, we had started a Kiwanis Club, and we used to meet every week, have a guest speaker. And so one day we had, for a speaker, we had this gentleman who, he dragged in this projector and a screen and slide sets. You know, this is back in early 80s. It turned out that he was a volunteer with Birthright.
Okay.
To be honest with you, I didn't know anything about Roe v. Wade or any of that stuff. He put the slides up and he talked as our speaker about abortion and what was going on in this country.
Hmm.
And it was like, for the first time in my life, I hadn't even thought about it.
Yeah.
I had a lot to think about. And this was on a Tuesday. And when the weekend came, I was going on a retreat on this Christ Renews His Parish.
Yeah.
And the goal of that, that Christ Renews His Parish is to how to be a Christian in the world, but it focuses on your church.
Okay.
And what can you do within your church. And so, so I show up for the weekend. And this guy had never met before, turns out to be one of the people on this retreat. And it was like, wow, you know, because I was so impressed with what he had done. And we spent that weekend doing this. It's a 3-day thing on the weekend. And we became friends. And the way this Christ Renews His Parish, as well as the Welcome Now that it's called, after you've gone through the retreat, and they're every 6 months. So the team that went through the retreat now is the team that's going to put that on. And that's the way it passes on forever.
Kind of multiplies.
And so I got really involved in church. And then there's another movement called Crucio. I think in here in Nebraska, they call it Christians Encountered Christ. And it was very popular there as well, especially for people who had been through this Christ Renews His Parish. And I decided to go on that weekend. And the goal of Crucio is to is how to be a Christian in the world, where it's Christ Renews His Parish, looked at what you can do within your church.
Yeah.
They talked about the fourth day, because it's a 3-day retreat. The fourth day is what you can do in the world.
Okay.
That's, you know, again, in retrospect, when I started looking back on my life, and I started to realize that these interventions had happened in my lifetime, I started writing notes down about, you know, some of these events, and I actually titled it, God Slapped Me Upside the Head and Said, You're Not Listening. That's, if I write that book, that's what it's going to be called. And so it was at this point in my life that I finally realized, oh my God, I'm being called to do certain things, and I just wasn't sure what that was. But these kind of gave me the vision and the hearing to make some decisions in my life.
So that's good. So it sounds like God used those interventions in your life to kind of guide you into, you know, your field of study and your ethics and medicine and all that good stuff. And thank God you listen. You know, thank God, you know, he opened those doors and because you could have said no.
Yeah.
But and thank God that you listened and you followed the path that he was kind of rolling in front of you.
Well, I got to share one other thing about this intervention. So I went to church yesterday morning. My granddaughter's at the St. Wenceslaus School, and they were having a special thing. So, and she was going to do some introduction to the thing. So anyway, I went to church yesterday, and what was the reading that they had? First Samuel 3, where Samuel thought Eli was calling
him. Yeah, speak, Lord,
and he kept saying, what? And Eli saying, I'm not calling you. Yeah. God's calling. Yeah. Eventually, they figured out it's God's calling. Yeah. I thought it was kind of interesting.
Yeah, sweet. So what inspired you to become the faculty moderator for Creighton Students for Life?
Well, I got involved in some pro-life activities. The first thing I did is I joined Pharmacists for Life, which is based in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
It is a great organization. Mm-hmm. I still belong to that. And then when I moved to Omaha to start to teach at Creighton, mm-hmm. And I was still actively involved in other pro-life organizations, I got invited to be an expert witness in two cases, one in Illinois and one in Washington, mm-hmm. About conscience, about pharmacists, mm-hmm. and conscientious refusal and all that stuff. When I came, after those occurred, I got invited to speak at the Business and Professional People for Life group.
Mm-hmm.
I happen to know John.
Mm-hmm. John Kellogg.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Everybody knows John Kellogg. Okay. But he invited me to come and speak about my experience with these two cases, and I did that. And then invited me again later on, and he said, why don't you just be a member of our board? So I wound up being a member of the board of directors, and I'm still involved with them. And so I'm currently on the pro-life committee at St. Wenceslaus, and I'm in the Knights of Columbus, and I was asked to be the life director. So my whole life is focused on
life issues.
Life issues. Yeah.
Good.
And so back in 1994, one of my pharmacy students was involved in the Creighton Students for Life organization. She was one of the leaders. Mm-hmm. And she came to me and said, our moderator is leaving. Mm-hmm. And she said, you need to be our moderator. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that was an easy decision. Yeah. I said, sure, I'll be your moderator. So it was that simple. I have to share with you one of those other students on our execs was named Damian Cook. Mm-hmm. And he turned out to be a priest after he graduated. Mm-hmm. And he was actually the pro-life director for the Omaha Archdiocese and stuff. Right. So great guy. I love working with the students because they're so dedicated.
Yeah. I've actually spoken with the Creighton Students for Life, and just a group of young people that are on fire for the Lord and want to do great work in the pro-life community. So we've actually had them come in and tour the center here and looking for ways for them to get involved. And so we love the Students for Life at Creighton and grateful for your moderation. And
Well, I've learned a lot, too. That's one of the reasons I'm still teaching after 49 years is the students help keep me young because they've got so much energy and focus.
I say that about my children. My children, they keep me young. So how do you encourage students to speak the truth about life compassionately in both academic and professional settings?
For me, I never hesitate to talk if I get invited to talk, mm-hmm. but I've used my life and my experience to set an example.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that tells other people what it, this is what it means to be pro-life.
Yeah.
And so that's basically what I've done.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever there's a local pro-life event, we go, and the students know, they don't go without me.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
For example, we just had the Life Chain mm-hmm. in October, and we do that every year.
Yeah.
And we started going to the March for Life in 2005,
mm-hmm.
which was a great experience. And once we started doing that, the students just got turned on to mm-hmm. that experience.
Okay.
And we've gone, except for the 1 year with COVID, we couldn't go.
Yeah.
But other than that, we go to D.C. every year.
Every January, yeah. What changes have you seen in student engagement for the pro-life cause over the past 30 years? Has there been a significant change, or is it kind of pretty steady?
Once the students get involved in our organization, they already come with the energy yeah. and enthusiasm.
Mm-hmm.
And for example, with the March for Life, a lot of the students who come, when I talk to them, mm-hmm. They did this in high school.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, with like the high school kids do, mm-hmm. you know, they ride those buses and go. I don't take buses to DC. We fly.
Me either.
We fly. But the point is that we have more and more students now who've already had that experience yeah. in high school. Mm-hmm. And now they're in college and they want to continue that great experience. So
okay.
that's the biggest difference.
Life Matters is the program where we engage life issues with critical thinking and a biblical worldview, and it is a ministry of Assure Women's Center. Before the year ends, you can make an impact for life. If we raise $500,000 by midnight on December 31st, some generous donors will add $75,000 more to help women find hope, truth, and courage to choose life for their unborn babies. Give now at firststeptolife.com. That's firststeptolife.com.
Welcome back to Life Matters. I'm Toni Clark with the Assure Women's Center. And if you're just tuning in, I'm talking today with Dr. Edward M. DeSimone, Professor of Pharmacy Sciences, Creighton University, and Faculty Moderator of Creighton Students for Life. So you do a lot of things, but in your view, what's the connection between your work in patient safety and your pro-life convictions?
Well, that's a good question. Let me share something with you related to that. And I've been a member of the American Pharmacists Association since 1971.
Oh.
And I've been a delegate to their House of Delegates for more than 30 years. Mm-hmm. Back in 1997, somebody came forward and said, and we were having all of those issues in different states mm-hmm. where pharmacists were being losing jobs because they didn't want to fill prescriptions for these abortifacient drugs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so somebody said, what are we going to do about it as an organization? Because there's nothing in our code of ethics or whatever. And so there was a massive debate in that year at the annual meeting with our delegates about we need to have a policy statement on mm-hmm. conscience.
Yeah.
And so and there was a lot of discussion, but as a delegate, I can get up and speak. So that was very helpful. And we actually passed what's called a pharmacist conscience clause.
Okay.
And it says, a policy is not a law. It's just a statement of an organization. But the American, and it's still on the books. It says basically, it has three parts. Pharmacists have a right of conscience.
Mm-hmm.
Two, however, the needs of the patient need to be met.
Mm-hmm.
Three, and some methodology has to be there to meet mm-hmm. the needs of the patient. And three, whatever that methodology is, it cannot supersede the pharmacist's right of conscience.
Okay.
And I was okay with that.
Yeah.
And in those days when that all came to happen, if somebody had a prescription in a pharmacy, the pharmacies were pretty good on supporting that, and they would have a sign up there if there were more than one pharmacist on duty, usually the other pharmacist would fill the
yeah.
prescription.
Mm-hmm.
And so and that worked out fine, and that's how I got involved in those two states. Though in Illinois mm-hmm. the governor wanted to force pharmacists to dispense prescriptions regardless of what they were,
right?
and that the governor of Washington State did the same thing.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. The interesting part is when I work with the American Center for Law and Justice. They hired me as an expert witness. And when I read the law in Illinois, they have a conscience act. Mm-hmm. Their conscience act was as good as anyone in the entire country. Mm. The governor was just trying to force, override it mm-hmm. With however he was mm-hmm. trying to do that. Yeah. And so that's how I got involved in, you know, more in depth in what's going on with conscience mm-hmm. as well.
Yeah. Oh. So Dr. DeSimone, since you're a pharmacist, I'd like to talk a little bit about the chemical abortions. So for those that are unfamiliar with that, could you explain how the abortion drugs, mifepristone and misoprostol, work?
Okay. The they actually fall under a special FDA-approved program mm-hmm. Together. It's medication-induced pregnancy termination mm-hmm. only up to 70 days.
Mm-hmm. Say that again, only up to 70 days.
Right, it's a 10-week mm-hmm. approval.
Yeah. I have questions about that in a minute, but I'll let you finish.
No problem. Actually, anybody could just look that up,
yep.
and it has the whole thing. Basically, mifepristone is a type of steroid, mm-hmm. and what it does is it blocks progesterone, mm-hmm. which supports the progesterone supports the development of the mm-hmm. child, but by blocking the progesterone, it makes the cervical mucus mm-hmm. and membrane hostile.
Okay.
And that's what they do. And so that's given first. Mm-hmm. And usually the protocol calls for 24 to 48 hours
yeah.
to give the patient the mm-hmm. Misoprostol.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's a prostaglandin.
Mm-hmm.
And it it stimulates things like menstrual bleeding,
mm-hmm.
Disruption of the placental mm-hmm. function. It stimulates uterine contractions
yeah.
and eventually termination of pregnancy.
Okay.
So if I might just make one step back here, the anti-life movement in this country are trying to change the definition of pregnancy.
Yeah.
That pregnancy occurs at the instant that
Absolutely.
The egg yes. and sperm meet. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Called a zygote or a conceptus, mm-hmm. and then it goes through, and then, excuse me, and then as it works its way down to the uterus and then implants, they're trying to change the definition of pregnancy to implantation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if you look up the definition of pregnancy in medical literature, it specifically addresses that as the meeting of egg and sperm, the development of this zygote, that is pregnant, mm-hmm. not the
right.
implantation. Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. what these drugs, what they want to do is say, okay, so you've got an egg and sperm that now is one.
Yeah.
But if we can keep it from implanting,
mm-hmm.
there's no abortion here. But yeah. the fact is that a zygote is a person or
absolutely.
Will
absolutely yeah.
be fully developed. So
yeah.
That's where we're at with that.
Yeah. What side effects or risks are associated with these drugs that people may not realize? And speak specifically to those people that may be taking the chemical abortion pill after those 70 days.
Right. Well, I'll give you there's a long laundry list,
yeah,
but I pulled out some things, mm-hmm. just the key things.
Okay.
So if we just look at the mifepristone, this is what's listed in the medical literature. Okay. Vaginal bleeding, uterine cramping, mm-hmm. anemia, mm-hmm. uterine rupture, uterine hemorrhage, mm-hmm. Pelvic pain, fever, white blood cell mm-hmm. elevation, increased heart rate, serious bacterial infections. Mm-hmm. Fatal, septic, or toxic shock.
Mm.
That's just for that one drug.
Yeah.
Then when we go to the misoprostol, headache, infection, cervical laceration, uterine rupture, hysterectomy, severe vaginal bleeding, shock, chest pain, edema, blood pressure fluctuations, disruption of heartbeat, dizziness, and then fatal and non-fatal heart attacks, embolisms, strokes. That's serious stuff. It's not like a lot of drugs out there. It's a nausea, vomiting, diarrhea. That is not the case with these drugs. These are serious drugs.
Absolutely. And I feel like the public messaging says that chemical abortion is safe and simple when essentially it's not. It's really, these are my terms. I'm not a medical professional, but you essentially, the young lady is going home to have a miscarriage all by herself.
Yes.
And in no simple terms would a miscarriage be classified as safe and simple. The abortion industry is marketing a chemical abortion as safe and simple, and it is absolutely not.
Absolutely.
Do you have any concerns about the FDA's recent approval of the generic versions of this drug?
The only issue about generic, it's the same drug, different company, no trade name. Mm-hmm. But once they start approving the generic versions of these drugs, that makes greater availability of these drugs.
Yeah.
And that's the problem with them. So, you know, when a company gets a patent for a drug, they've got 17 years. Mm-hmm. So that's why, they're supposed to do all their research and everything.
Right.
So it comes out 5 years before the patent ends.
Yeah.
And so this opens the door to more people producing that drug.
Yeah. So some are arguing that refusing to sell abortion pills limits the woman's health care options. How would you respond to that claim?
Okay. I love that question.
Me too.
Abortion is not health care.
Health care, yes.
Okay. We all agree on that. It really is death care because the goal of using these medications, I shouldn't really call them medications. The goal of using these drugs is to terminate the life of an unborn child. So, you know, individuals can do within reason whatever they want in regard to their health. Mm-hmm. But once an individual becomes pregnant, then we have another person to worry about.
Yeah.
And, you know, this idea that it's my body, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it is your body, but there's a body inside your body.
Absolutely.
And you can't, it's not a possession. You can't just throw something out like that.
Yeah.
And so it's just very frustrating. And it's very frustrating to talk to somebody because they really want to talk. They keep promoting this healthcare side.
Yeah.
You see it all the time.
Yeah. It's a hard argument to argue, but what I generally tell people is if you hear the term healthcare, look at who's when you hear the term women's healthcare, look at the people that are saying it and what services they provide. Because women's healthcare would include diabetes care, hypertension, all those things, heart disease, and so when I talk to people and they're so healthcare, women's healthcare, like listen to who's saying it and look at the services they provide and you tell me if they're providing women's healthcare.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly the point.
Absolutely. So do you think the spread of abortion pills through telemedicine and mail order services impact patient safety? And what concerns do you have about the lack of direct medical supervision in chemical abortions?
Okay. That's a two-part question, I guess, because my involvement with patient safety is about the normal practice of medicine and pharmacy. Is it the right drug for the right patient? Is it the right strength? And we review that, okay? And so with this issue of abortion, again, it's not healthcare. So what kind of patient safety are we looking at if someone is using a drug that's going to kill an unborn child? And so this whole process of telemedicine now has opened up. It's relatively new.
Yeah.
But it's opened up new access points.
Yeah.
And, you know, now if you got hair loss and you want to have something or you want to get another diet product or whatever, you can go to telemedicine and get these things. But these types of drugs are not, it's nothing like I want to lose weight or I want to get my hair back, you know. So we have to look at this telemedicine from a more patient safety, or actually the child safety perspective. You know, there's a nationally, there is a law has been passed for quite a long time ago. It requires drug utilization review when a pharmacist dispenses a prescription. We need to review the medication, make sure it's the right drug for the right patient, and all those questions that, that I mentioned before. And so I really believe that with a lot of this telemedicine, we're skirting the drug utilization review process. I think we need to look at that a little bit more.
Yeah, when you said the right drug with the right for the right patient, I think about that, because we've essentially, with the abortion pill, it's almost like a blanket prescription, and you don't, there is no, I'm saying oversight, it should be. And so we're basically saying this fits every female that wants to order it.
Right.
And that certainly not, should not be, that certainly is not the right drug for the right patient.
Exactly.
There's no one doing that analysis.
Please join us next week for part two of our interview with Dr. Dee Simone. Life Matters is an educational outreach resource of Assure Women's Center in Omaha, Nebraska. To learn more about the ministry of Assure, visit firststeptolife.com. That's firststeptolife.com. There you can learn about the many services we provide, including how we come alongside abortion-minded mothers and empower women to choose life for her and her baby, as well as find our most current broadcasts and all of our past episodes. You can also find information on our website about how you can partner with us in the life-saving work of Assure. Before the year ends, you can make an impact for life. If we raise $500,000 by midnight on December 31st, some generous donors will add $75,000 more to help women find hope, truth, and courage to choose life for their unborn babies. Give now at firststeptolife.com. That's firststeptolife.com. Thanks for listening to Life Matters. Join us again next week at the same time right here on Bot Radio Network.